"In the beginning was information," is the sermon title, but I stole it from a book called "In the Beginning Was Information." I read this book in 2015 because I was intrigued by its author, Werner, they probably say Werner in German, Gitt, Dr. Gitt, now retired. He was director of the Federal Institute of Physics and Technology for Germany. Oh, I thought that's fascinating. When I find a German who is not only a creationist, but a young Earth creationist, I want that. And now that he's retired, he travels around Europe speaking on creation. In the beginning was information. Well, here's part of the back cover. The huge amount of information. And the DNA alone refutes the possibility of non-intelligent beginning of life. Germans. You know, in 1859, that was a while ago, but I think they should have known even then, life comes from life. Look around. Life comes from life. They should have known that a long time ago. I mean, I don't know. I thought about this morning, shall I bring a fork and spoon up here and say, do you think these two are going to have a baby? Should I bring a pair of socks and say, is life going to come out of the pair of socks? Life comes from life. Didn't they know that in 1859? Well, they should have known it all the way back in 1859. But now we can study micro things and nano things, and it's not my life's work. But Darwin thought anything small is simple. No. The fact that something is small does not mean it's simple. It was complicated. And when we think of 1859, I think we're a little bit ahead of that. Life can't start itself. Now, last week I told you I would favor starting with ICR or Answers in Genesis if one has not research creation science very much. If you have degrees in science, I'm not eligible for it, but you could perhaps join the Creation Research Society if you want more technical journals on that. But it seems like it's not just the conservatives that know that life begins with life. Remember, I quoted Francis Collins last week. He was the person that mapped out the DNA. And he's not a young Earth creationist, and he started out being an atheist, but like the German director of physics, in the end, Francis Collins thought atheism isn't going to work. Now I have his book, and I've looked at his book, and I don't like his book, but he has the same thing. And Francis Crick is the one who studied, found the DNA in 1955, and he thought it's so complicated, life cannot begin itself. Maybe it came here from outer space. Maybe an extraterrestrial kind of came with a pod and planted life on Earth. That's 1955, and Francis Collins, by 2006, kind of thinks, that isn't going to work. Simple is complicated. And it's known now, it should have been known all along, but it's known now that simple is complicated. And so you have this a German young Earth creationist that says life has to come from life, and you have this American who is a theistic evolutionist but still says life has to come from pre-existing life. It cannot start itself. Didn't they know that in 1859? Should they have not known it already? I'm thinking about the various weeks of this sermon. I mentioned Michael Behe last week, Darwin's Black Box, in which he argues for irreducible complexity, that some things are so complex they could not be built up gradually. And Darwin's Black Box, he pretty well destroys evolution, and he's not even a young earth creationist. There are a lot of them like this. In the beginning was information. Also true, if we quote Genesis better, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. We looked at the first verses of Genesis last time, and we stopped on day 3. Now, normally you'd like to stop at the end of a day, but we stopped in the middle of day 3 because that's when God says it's very good. So we're still on day 3, and we're in the middle of day 3, but it was the first time God said it's very good. So come with me to Genesis 1, and we'll read the rest of day 3, verse 10 through 13. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. There's our reference to good. Then God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees on the earth bearing fruit after their kind with seed in them. And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind. A second time, just on the same day, and God saw that it was very good. There was evening and there was morning the third day. Perhaps it would be possible to put a gap in Genesis 1:1, but our Hebrew scholars, the ones I trust the most, say it's not very likely. And you'd have to have a Bible verse that somewhat clearly says, Satan fell here. We do not have a Bible verse that says clearly Satan fell here. More likely, there is no gap, both in terms of linguistics, both in terms of the age of the earth. More likely, there is no gap. And when we have day 1 and day 2 and part of day 3, before God says it was good, it wasn't horrible, it just wasn't ready for life. And God is kind of baking the cake, shall we say, kind of making the recipe for the way he wants it. And in the beginning, it wasn't ready for life. But on day 1 and day 2 and part of day 3, we get to verse 10 where he says, now it's ready for life. That would be the definition of good. So by day 3, the earth is ready for plants, seeds, and fruit. And that's what's happening here, plants, seeds, and fruit. Relative to whether there is a gap between verses 1 and 2, again, the Hebrew, one person says 50 out of 1,522 times there's a gap. But out of 1,522 times, there's no gap in all but 20. Another thing for saying Satan did not fall here is Job, where it says, the sons of God sang for joy at the creation of the stars. That's Job 38, verse 6. And sometimes in Job, you have to watch who's speaking because his counselors weren't always right. But in Job 38, it is God who is speaking. And God is saying, all the angels sang for joy. A little bit evidence that the fall had not yet taken place. On day 3, it's ready for life. God's kind of taken the, shall we say, 2.5 days to get it ready for life. And so he made seeds and plants. Now, I have a little illustration coming, but I'd like to start out with, say, an artist has painted colorful flowers. What are the chances that there is a painting with all kinds of colorful flowers and the painting made itself? If we took a survey down in the mall or or talked with people up and down the street, and we had a painting of colorful flowers, and we said, did this start itself? Well, if the painting can't start itself, why would we think the colorful flowers started themselves? Or if we have a bowl of fruit, and we would say, did this painting of the bowl of fruit make itself? Well, if the painting of the bowl of fruit didn't make itself, then the bowl of fruit didn't make itself. And we have that on our table, especially in the winter. We'll have pears and green somewhat, and then they ripen and turn yellow. And we have bananas, and we have oranges, and we have red apples. And if a painting of a bowl of fruit can't make itself, then the bowl of fruit can't make itself. Now, I did this years ago, but one time when I was at a pastor's conference in Dallas, they had all these little things spinning. Maybe you remember this from maybe 15 years. All these little things spinning. I can show it to you afterwards. It has a really nice spin on it, and it's artistic all the way down. It has a point down here. And what happens, I don't know whether these 25-year-old seeds would work, but the table had put a little moisture on them, and the whole table, they were all standing up and spinning. And I thought, what in the world is that table over there? Why were we having a toy exhibit at a pastor's conference in Dallas? And there was nobody there to ask. So for hours, these things are spinning on the table. They're like spinning. And then eventually a guy comes in. I found out he was a teacher. I can't remember whether high school or college, so he couldn't stay there all day, but he poured a little water on them, and they're spinning again. And these are clearly artistic in design. Come look at one sometime. And they get wet, and they spin, and they go on the ground. And he was the exhibitor for the Creation Research Society, the local branch in Dallas. That's more for people that actually do this for a living. And I think you have to have a graduate degree in some science, but then the members have monthly meetings. And his point was, this is artistic. This is clearly designed. They spin and grow on the ground. Now, Steve Hayward said he thinks he can find them around here, so you can talk with him if you want some more of them. I have five of them, but they don't look like, well, they look like design. They look like intelligence, and of course, that was the point. And he was at the representing the Creation Research Society, and he was trying to get members or pastors that say, we have members in our church that have graduate degrees in sciences, and they can come to the Dallas-Fort Worth meeting. Plants are very strange. They are artistic. C.S. Lewis said this, and if we think about it, he's right. He said, Jesus' miracles are the same thing God does every year, except Jesus did them faster. And then he would talk about Jesus turned the water into grapes and juice and wine. Well, God does it every year. People are just so used to it, we overlook it. God turns the water into wine every year. And C.S. Lewis would talk about Jesus multiplied the loaves. God multiplies the loaves every year. We're just so unused to it, brainwashed by society, that we don't notice. And sometimes we're so busy we don't notice. But it's rather obvious if you think about it. The whole thing is a miracle. It's just a little slower. I'm very annoyed by watching television shows where we have advertisements where we have a ape people running around with spears for Curiosity Stream. Now, did they go to the east or west coast of the major cities and take pictures of living ape people with spears running around, or is this fiction? I mean, think about it. It's a show. There aren't any pictures of any real beings like this. It's a show. I'm hoping that we will have an interest to read more creation science books. I can't do it for a living. I'm not an expert at it. I'll always be a little bit of an amateur. But if we look at, say, plants and birds, if we look at, say, crops, we'd say it's all a miracle. When the kids were little, I would take them canoeing in northern Michigan. And it was fascinating to go canoeing in northern Michigan. I would say before we left, I want you to count how many different color flowers you see today. I want you to count how many different color birds you see today. And the answer was usually about 8 to 10 of each. The other psychological interest was, where are all the other people? Because in northern Michigan, there are visitors all the time. They come from Chicago and they come from Detroit. And they're there all the time. How many of them are out in the woods? Hardly ever. How many of them are canoeing down the river and doing what our kids did? Hardly ever. Where are most of them? Most of them are in the stores. Most of them are looking in the malls. Most of them can see out the window of the stores. There's the beautiful blue Great Lakes, and we're out in the country. I would say if a person looks around, they would see design. I would say if a person thinks about it, life must come from life. These are designed. So are all the colorful plants. So are all the colorful birds. And in, say, sermon illustrations, we have not even started. When we get to humans being created, we will look at more than meets the eye. And more than meets the eye was written by a doctor, and there'll be lots of illustrations. Not stopping with the eye is definitely designed. It was evening, it was morning, third day. Genesis 1:13. I notice evening is first. That would be a Jewish culture would think about it. They start their day at sundown. I don't know, you know, Moses probably wrote first, but then the Jewish culture followed it. Evening is the beginning of the day. Evening and morning, they put it that way. Well, God is light, so perhaps he was the source of light on day one, but now we move to Genesis 1:14, and we have astronomical lights, solar system lights, galaxy lights. So let's read Genesis 1:14 through verse 19. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night. And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And let them be for lights in the expanse of the heaven to give light on earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. And he made the stars also. God placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on earth and to govern the day and the night and to separate the light from the darkness. And now we repeat, and God saw that it was good, or tov, and there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. Lights are ori. Now, maybe not everybody has interest in this, but I wonder about the Jewish name for ladies, Orith. I wonder about the name Orin, which used to be more common. I saw a political sign. It's in, this was in Potter County, I think, Ori. Ori means lights. That's where it comes from. And I don't know whether that name comes from a creation, but it would come from Isaiah 60 verse 11, where it says, "Rise and shine." Ori is shine. Orith is lights. And somewhere along the line in that family, they named the boy Sunshine. Ori. Named the girls Orith. That's what's here. God made the Orith. For astronomical studies, I have always liked Donald DeYoung. And if you want, sometime I can show you Donald DeYoung's book, The Astronomy and the Bible. He's a teacher in Indiana, and he does question and answer format. Well, he will ask questions about stars, sun, moon, meteors, asteroids, distant galaxies, and so forth. And question and answer, I would recommend Donald DeYoung. Jason Lyle is a more modern, and maybe time to talk about the library. Cannon House, the Glens have put some books for display in there. That book, that library has always been heavy on creation science. It always has been. Years ago, when the donor started the library, Dr. Stenhouse gave to it. You might remember him. And his statement was, you can do whatever you want, but make it for youth and adults, just so it's split. So it's been books for youth and adults all the way through, and videos for youth and videos for adults. It's been that split all the way through. And at the beginning, we did lots of creation science DVDs, lots of creation science books. So they're back there on the shelves. And Jeanette Kantrader worked real hard with that. And now Gloria and Sarah have worked real hard on that. So they're back there. I like Donald DeYoung, like I said, and Jason Lyle. But for illustrations, sometimes there's value in using someone that you don't agree with fully. For illustrations, I like the book called The Privileged Planet. I would recommend that if we've already studied young Earth creationism. The Privileged Planet was written by people who are creationists. I can tell they don't believe in a young Earth, but they're creationists. There are two of them. One's last name, Guillermo Gonzalez. I believe he's from Chile, although he went to Washington State and teaches in Iowa at a university, and worked at NASA. And Jay Richards, the other author, it's kind of funny. I was eating in a restaurant in Amarillo, and someone came up and said, "You're a pastor. My brother writes books, and this Jay Richards' sister, and she lives here." At any rate, this book called The Privileged Planet tackles the idea that the Earth is the best place from which to learn about the stars. In the past, people making fun of the Bible would say, Earth is not at the center. Well, yeah, the center is like dead. It's kind of a gas in there and fires in there. The center of the galaxy is like dead. The Earth is not in the center of the galaxy, but is on a spiral. It's the best place known anywhere from which to study the stars. There's your astronomer writing. So, in a way, Earth was a privileged planet, and it is for us to learn. They also argue in their book that Earth must be created because there's all kinds of things that make life on Earth possible. And without them, life would not be possible. One of the things they talk about is the eclipse. And I'd have to go get their book and say everything, but I remember we had a sun eclipse a few years ago, and at least in our house, we bought all these glasses. You can go look at the sun. And the Earth's shadow comes right exactly, just the right size. Well, these two authors say it's the best place for discovery, and that the fraction I remember is 1/400. The sun is 400 times further away than the moon, and the Earth is 400 times bigger, so when they hit, it's kind of like, wow, it's right there. And Guillermo and Richard say it's the best place for discovery. People ought to know. It may not be at the center of the universe, but center of the galaxy, but it's the best place to study. It's the best place for learning. Also, as far as, say, chemical properties, they talk about things that are made just right for life and would not be an accident. That's why they say the privileged planet. One of them is water. Most everything else, when it freezes, it sinks. Water, when it freezes, goes up like ice cubes. They float around. And these two authors say, if that were not true, and it's very unusual, if that were not true, the ocean would freeze and sink. The ocean would freeze and sink. The ocean, each one would crack down and sink. We'd be all dead. There's a very good book, The Privileged Planet. Now, I can't read these each week to get ready for sermons. I read it like 15 years ago. But it's a very good book that certain properties had to be this way or life would not exist. I mean, if you make the sun a little bigger, we burn up. You make it a little smaller, we freeze. If you make the earth more distant, we die. If you make the earth more closer, we die. It's just right. It's just right for the discovery and learning. The best place to have discovery and learning, and it's the safest place. It was made just right for life. Another thing these two talk about is the tilt of the earth that makes our seasons. We've all seen globes and on a stand where they're 23.5 degree tilt. So it makes the seasons and makes life habitable and makes crops grow. But their point is not just that. Their point is that if there were no moon, this wouldn't work. The moon keeps the earth in a tilt. So it's kind of like they were put together so that there'd be a tilt, so that there'd be seasons, so that there'd be crops, and you can't have it without the moon, and that was found out in 1993. So it's kind of like it's made for life. It was designed for life. Earth's climate stability is dependent upon the existence of the moon. Without the moon, Earth's tilt would vary greatly with devastating results. There's a quote. So the privileged planet is it argues the anthropic principle. The Earth was designed for discovery. The Earth was designed for life. And all kinds of things have to just happen. And they would not happen by accident. I do not have this book, but they quote it in their book called God and the Astronomer. And they quote a different O'Keefe. You know, we're friends with Jay O'Keefe. They quote a different O'Keefe. Oh, my. Harvard and University of Chicago and NASA and all that. We are, by astronomical standards, a pampered people. A pampered group of creatures. The Darwinian claim to have it all by ourselves is ridiculous. If the universe had not been made with exact precision, we would never have come into existence. It is my view that these circumstances indicate the universe is created for humans to live in. So I just quoted the people that are a little more liberal than I am, but if I were you, I'd start with Donald DeYoung and Jason Lyle, and you can see how these illustrations are helpful because they end up being the same way as far as atheists are concerned, that life cannot start itself, and that the world was made for life and made for discovery. And there's intelligent design all over. I won't pick up the little seed over here again. Well, let's go ahead and read a little bit about life beginning in verse 20. Life here would be birds and fish. Then God said, let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures, and let the birds fly above the earth and in the open expanse of heavens. And God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarmed after their kind, and every winged bird after its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters of the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth. And there was evening, and there was morning, day five. I thought about when do I put some more information here about life. I think I'll do it now and not wait until we get to the animals, because aren't birds and fish life? You know, more on animals next time, but aren't birds and fish, they are life. I would put in here, remember, in 1977, a Japanese fishing trawler was near New Zealand, and they pulled up this sea critter. Okay, this is 1977. And they pulled up this sea critter, and their evidence was it had only been dead for about 30 years because it wasn't bones, it had flesh all over it. And the Japanese said, that looks like a plesiosaur. Now, I don't know for sure that it was, but here they're out fishing and they pull up this sea critter. They don't know what it is. And if you want to see pictures of it, I have the articles back in the office. And I have the books back in the office. Wow. Big and ugly, and maybe the dinosaurs were not that old. Maybe not. We've got to save studies on the dinosaurs till we get further and we can talk about soft tissue dinosaurs again. Soft tissue. But they found a really weird sea creature. The Japanese government made a postage stamp out of it. And I had the old articles. The last time we talked about this, we passed them around, so I didn't make them again. And then birds. Now, I'm not an expert on birds, but they are fascinating. One time, they did a study of birds, and they took him out on a boat, and they put him in these little cages that spin. And they're out in the Caribbean. They're out in the middle of nowhere, spin. In. They let them loose. They flew home. They just flew home. Looks like intelligent design. Looks like they know. So life begins here. What are the chances of life starting itself? 1/10 with 40,000 zeros. Sir Frederick Hoyle, who is an evolutionist. I guess if you're an evolutionist, they call you sir. You get far enough. 1/10, he says, with 40,000 zeros. Statistical zero is 1/10 to the 170th. Statistical zero is 1/10 to the 170th. So say the books I'm reading. 1/10 to the 170th is statistical zero. The chance of life starting itself, according to the evolutionist, is 1/10 with 40,000 zeros. And yet he's an evolutionist. Yeah, I'm looking forward to next week. But I have, with our granddaughter, touched this rail on the way up here, on the way in. See this rail? Is it going to have a baby anytime? No, it's not going to have a baby. Life has to come from life. Life can't come from non-life. Let's pray together, please.